What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Storytime with Tofu. I hope you enjoyed that little intro there. It is from one of my favorite new animes of this year called Shokugeki no Soma. It started, I think, about July and finished around October. It is the most ridiculous food anime I've ever seen, and I highly, highly suggest you watch it because you probably will start thinking about more random things when you're eating, for good and for worse. But anyway, today on the show, we're going to talk about Star Wars, and you know what? I'm going to talk a little about The Force Awakens, but I'm mostly going to talk about the prequels and how I kind of hate them, but at the same time, as a kid, they literally gave me everything I wanted. So, subject one will be about that. We're going to talk a little bit about MTV's new series called The Shannara Chronicles, ABC Family switching their new name to, quote, Freeform. Yes, yes, we now have a network called Freeform, where we can, I assume, experience freeform television. And we're going to end it off with my three favorite comedies of the year. Again, I know I talked about this last time. Casual, Master of None, and You're the Worst. But I'm going to start off and say I really appreciate anyone who's actually listening to this. I know there aren't a few of you, and just stay strong, because maybe some more people will join you. I don't know. But anyway, a few changes that are going to happen are, we'll go with that one. my friends are considering combining with me, in which they're going to do some sports commenting, some sports podcasting, and of course we'll have some nice crossover episodes. So you can still probably find me episodically under the name Storytime with Tofu, but stay tuned because I am probably going to merge with this channel, and you'll be subscribed to the channel and you'll see their episodes as well as mine. So a few things to look forward to. But anyway, Star Wars. Okay, and honestly, at this point, if you haven't seen Star Wars, I just really feel sorry for you, because you need to. The Force Awakens was fantastic in my mind. And forget all this hoopla of like, oh, it wasn't realistic. It just gave me the same movie before. Well, there's no shit. That's what I wanted. And that's a completely understandable reactionary decision, considering that the prequel movies arguably didn't give the true fans of the original movies what they wanted. Now, I became a self-aware Star Wars fan probably around the age of 13 or 14. Before that, I was just a devotee to the cult, the religion of Star Wars. I didn't like the prequel movies more than the original trilogy. I think I saw the original trilogy when I was 3, and it was still mind-blowing to me. I think I've seen, unfortunately, Return of the Jedi like 500 times, because every time my mother asks, what movie do you want to watch on Friday? It's like, oh, Return of the Jedi. And yes, 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 John Boyega will say the same thing too. Or maybe it was Oscar Isaac. I apologize. I don't remember which interview. But both said they think Empire Strikes Back is a better movie, which I do agree with. But I have seen Return of the Jedi so many times, and I love that movie so much. It's kind of like permanently ingrained that whenever someone asks, oh, what's your favorite Star Wars movie? I typically have to say that one. Plus, I mean, that space battle was awesome, right? Like, all wings were pulled in, like Gold Leader standing by, Green Leader standing by, Gray Leader standing by, and Red Leader standing by, which, let's hope this Rogue Squadron movie next Christmas is really good. But anyway, I don't think The Force Awakens would have been this successful, or as, and despite again the criticism, as well received as a movie by fans and audiences if we didn't suffer through those prequel movies. And again, not to justify that, oh, you know, George Lucas made these with the foresight that, you know, we'd get another Force Awakens that would blah, 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 revitalize everything. No. Okay, so let's break down the prequel movies here. Let's re-explore them. So The Phantom Menace is where, you know, we meet Anakin Skywalker for the first time. There isn't the sense of a greater galactic struggle going on. It's literally Jedi Knights, and the galaxy are full of them, which is, again, a reason I love the prequel movies so much. I mean, not love. I love that concept brought forth in the prequel movies a lot. Go to save a queen who's under some weird trade embargo by some, like, Nemoidians. Yes, they're called Nemoidians. Who are, like, oppressing them. And again, as a kid, I didn't really even think about that. But, you know, my friend did point out, like, go read the scroller from episode four, A New Hope, and then read the scroller for episode one, A Phantom Menace. They're completely different ideas. Like, it's kind of hilarious how they're so foreign from one another. But regardless of that, let's play. And again, this comes from a 90s fan, someone who was a child literally in the 90s, not a teenager, and their lens of this entire situation, okay? Because, I'm born in 1990. I was 3 when I first saw the original Star Wars. And honestly, I didn't really have an idea that they had come out so many years before. I think that really didn't resonate with me that back then. And I don't think it did, because... Do you remember the original Star Wars posters, the art drawn ones? That's to me what I think of when I think of watching it when I was 3. Mostly because I think we got rid of them at a garage sale, which I'm really upset about. But when I think I became more self-aware that these movies were, came out a long time ago, is I got the anniversary collection. And this is, to be very clear, this is not the VH collection that came out after those terrible 90s re-releases. And yes, even as a kid, I was very aware I didn't like those. I don't know if you can picture this. It was a box set. It had all 3 movies. On episode 1 was a picture of a stormtrooper. Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, was a picture of Darth Vader. And I believe episode 6, Return of the Jedi, was a picture of Yoda. You know, his face is on the box, blah, blah, blah. And the only reason I had any semblance that this movie had come out before was that, remember, like, VHS, there's no chapters, there's no, like, metal screen, you just see, you know, continuous play and you can fast forward through it. Well, every single one of these movies opened with, I think, okay, time is so hard to picture as a kid, so I don't know, it could have been 5 minutes, it could have been 20, but to me it felt like, about 12, 15 minutes of this interview with George Lucas, where he's talking about his ideas, he's talking about stars, and he's kind of also talking about where the franchise had become. And so, at that point, clearly it was hard to deny that, this clearly didn't just come out. I think 7-year-old me figured that out. But let's talk about what I loved about those movies. And again, purely from the lens of a child in the 90s, not someone who was 13 when they saw the original Star Wars in theaters back in the day, against someone who saw it when they were 3 years old for the first time in 1993. Obviously, my favorite character in the world was Luke Skywalker. And it's easy to, because he's like, you know, it's set up that way. It's kind of like how everyone loves Peter Parker. He's this young kid with a destiny set in front of him, and he finds out he has cool powers, and, you know, he loses his family, and then he has to figure that out. Like, most writers, especially superhero writers, will talk about, like, this kind of separation from your family. The idea that once they're gone, yes, it's terrible, and I love how newer movies kind of explore that a little further in terms of trauma, etc., personality development. But it is a sense of freedom, you know. You know, Peter Parker loses his uncle, and, you know, I know the Aunt May relationship is really important, but, like, that's a pretty big moment. Batman loses his parents. Luke Skywalker, who's never known his family, loses the only people who've raised him, and then has nowhere to really look to except forward. So, and not saying that I want to lose my parents, but, you know, as a kid, you attach to the idea of this freedom to explore your powers, to explore your destiny, and become this all-powerful force of good. Like, if you can't think back on your childhood and remember those resonating feelings, like, I guess the closest I can tell you to do is, like, watch a shonen anime or something like that and kind of just remember what that felt like. It's not that hard. It's a pure feeling of joy of what you're watching, because you think, A, you want to be this person, and B, you want to be everything they represent. # Monkey D. Luffy on the great anime One Piece, which, by the way, I believe is on episode, like, 768, and I am current on it, but, you know, perspective, I suppose. This manga has existed since 1999. This show, I believe, has existed since 2001, so if you have a chance, go watch One Piece. But anyway, back to Star Wars. And what is kind of frustrating in terms of, like, your imaginative play within the original trilogy of Star Wars, and, you know, the books, which I've, you know, read later, which are not canon anymore, which I'll explain later, somewhat address, is that, okay, Luke's a Jedi. I guess I want to be him, but more so I want to follow him. I want to fight with him. I want I want to be a Jedi. Okay? That is something that is, to me, very quintessential in understanding what the prequels did. And I think more important, you know, Lucas was a father at this point, what he may have been thinking when he tried to craft that world. Okay. Hardest part about finding yourself in Star Wars or fanficking or imagining an expanding universe of the Star Wars, original Star Wars trilogy, is the Jedi Order is extinct. You know, we talk about these, men and women as legends, as almost mythical heroes of the past, and we're left with kind of, the Shannara Chronicles situation. The last Jedi, the last of the Shannara. That's a pretty common theme in fantasy lore, etc. And I was, that didn't, discourage my love of those movies, but I did really want to kind of embrace and feel that time where it's like, hey, maybe I could have been chosen as a Jedi. I would have been a Jedi Knight. And forget the even idea of the Republic, because I didn't really even care about that till probably Attack of the Clones. Just purely this idea that Yoda was this old master, and he literally, there was a time where your planet could be visited by a Jedi, like you could be attacked and you could be saved by a Jedi, or more so, you could be that Jedi. I cannot stress that enough. I wanted to the nth degree to be a Jedi Knight. I wanted my own lightsaber, I wanted my own robes, and I wanted, to have my own story fighting along either Luke Skywalker or, after the prequel movies came out. I hate to say it, in the Clone Wars. Like, the idea of the Clone Wars, I thought, was a great idea. It just kind of wasn't executed very well, and there were a lot of other issues with the movies that kind of detracted from this whole situation. But, going back to this idea of the Clone Wars, where you have Jedi leading troops into battle, that's pretty awesome. And in my opinion, that's why the Clone Wars animated series that came out in the early 2000s, not the CG one, which is also very good, which I'll talk about later, was excellent. It is awesome to see Mace Windu face down an entire battle droid battalion and see him just wreck it with force powers. Like, I understand we're at a time where, we're sick of seeing the same old violence, we're sick of just seeing fighting, and I know that's why people really didn't like Man of Steel. Well, also that was kind of a stupid movie, but at the end of the day, a part of me still wants to see really cool fighting. And, what better medium for that than an entire galactic conflict between what is really convenient, clone troopers, which we can kind of summon tool and dehumanize, led by Jedi, and these kind of dickish droids that are led by some puppeted Sith Lord. Like, you can't tell me that sounds stupid. I'm sorry. Like, if anyone, I just, without seeing it, thinks that's stupid, I'm sorry, then at the same reason, then why the fuck do we care that in Lord of the Rings, dwarves are fighting elves and blah, 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 orcs, etc. Like, he gave us a product to work with that could have been very interesting. And honestly, a lot of media generated after that universe was established, encapsulate that core idea. I 100% believe that BioWare, makers of KOTOR, and of course, probably more well-known, the Mass Effect series, they made Knights of the Old Republic, which came out, I think, 2005, I think even before Revenge of the Sith came out. And that movie was fantastic. I mean, that game was fantastic. And it did play in this idea. I mean, to me, that game was the first pioneer of the first perfect compromise between the concepts of the prequel movies, yet the lovable, adventure-like combining of personalities and crew and characters in the original trilogy. And also, this can be broken down by more Star Wars cartoons, which I will probably talk about later. But that game puts you in command of a Jedi. You could feel like a Jedi Knight. You could seek the Jedi Order for help. Your guide and friend was also Jedi Knight Bastila Shallan, the youngest member to ever, master battle meditation, etc., etc. That, and then of course you're supported by a colorful cast of characters. You have, Mission Vow, a scrappy Twi'lek, who's kind of your smuggler and thief, and she's, followed around by a giant Wookiee who's her protector. you meet a Jedi archivist in some of those games who wants to discover more about the Jedi in the past and the Force. You meet a pilot who's conflicted with dealing with the fact that he's Force sensitive, et cetera, et cetera. You meet a Mandalorian. You meet a smart-talking assassin droid that is also a protocol droid and can speak, you know, sand people. Even your astro droid has personality. And again, those are all things I definitely associate with the original trilogy being really good. But you were kind of given a new world to play in. And that new world, to me, even though this is 1,000 years before the Clone Wars, is still based around this concept that there was this Eternal Republic, an Eternal Republic guarded and protected by Jedi Knights. I mean, shit, 500 years later, you know, the SWTOR, the Star Wars MMORPG made by, 500 years chronologically in the former Star Wars universe, not like physically in this world. You know, that comes out, and it's the same thing. The first drop trailer for that, which again, I don't know why we haven't made an entire intensely rendered CG movie of Star Wars yet, was the Sith returning, crashing into a Jedi temple, and you see an epic lightsaber duel. Like, there's a reason we like Star Wars, and we like what, you know, I read an article once, like, you know, shit, maybe we hate all this crap about Star Wars physically sometimes, but it's the idea that you can't shake out of your mind. This idea of a world in a galaxy far, far away, which is, again, very different than, you know, trying to, you know, simulate Star Trek. Like, you know, I could be from Earth. I am from Earth in 2235, and, you know, I'm from Hawaii, and my parents were wayfarers, so I decided to master in astrology and use that skill to help the USS Enterprise discover new places. Like, that is very specific. That is a very, like, concrete idea that, you know, and what's nice about Star Wars, it's a little more abstract. It's a little more along the lines of high fantasy versus, you know, it's honestly more like Lord of the Rings, kind of. It's a mythical, wonderful place, to even so where the technology in it almost seems like, you know, unrealistic isn't the wrong word, but like very fantasized, you know. And that's something that the prequels, despite all of their shortcomings, did put forward and expand upon. And yes, cool, Hayden Christensen was a terrible actor. They were boring. Jar Jar Binks was a terrible decision. They didn't capture the magic of the original movies. Well, first of all, if you didn't like Revenge of the Sith, that's fine. I did. I that's one of the few prequel movies I really have... I don't have a ton of hate for, in terms of... I think I saw that like 4 times in theaters. I thought that was a good end to the prequel trilogy. And I guess my only complaint is... the real complaint is... You know, Darth Vader showed Padme. No, like that was real dumb. But I mean, you know, it was a nice little wrap up to that chapter of my life. And honestly, everything else written, books or about the Clone Wars have been really entertaining. And you know what? Like, forget the movies. George Lucas still gave us that time period. Without it, I 100% think Star Wars would not be doing as well just among kids as it is doing today. And B, it would not be doing as well. I mean, The Force Awakens arguably would have been terrible. Or it would have been so different okay, that's not true. It could have been so different that it could have been better. But in my opinion, it wouldn't have felt like Star Wars as much as this movie did, The Force Awakens did. And the reason I mentioned George Lucas being a father at the time is this is very important to remember. Both his daughters appear in that movie, not as Jedi, of course. But do you remember that scene where Senator Organa shows up at the Jedi Temple and the clone troopers say, there's been a rebellion, you have to leave this area. And you see this young Jedi Knight jump out and try and kill a few clones, and then he eventually is shot dead. And Bail has like a terrible reaction to it and runs away. Well, that young little Jedi is George Lucas's son. And there's no doubt in my mind that he was like, dad, you know, he's talking to his dad about making these movies, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, oh, son, well, what do you want to be? What do you like? It's like, well, dad, I wish I was a Jedi. Like, and, you know, it's very easy in my mind to picture George Lucas saying, oh, kids really, really like that aspect of the series. They like, you know, obviously the space combat, but what if we give Jedi more time to space combat? Like, hence we got two Jedi Starfighter games. But that to me is why these movies were made this way. And despite all the, again, I've said this 50 times now, I'm sorry, despite all the shortcomings with characters, certain plot development and acting, he still did a really good job of giving us another entire wing of this universe he created to play around with and explore. And again, that's something that Star Wars does spectacularly. It's the never, like someone wrote it, it's the never-ending franchise, and it can be the never-ending franchise because it's a galaxy far, far away with wonderful lore where arguably anything could happen. So I mean, that's that. And I'm going to take a lot of flack for this. A lot of people probably disagree. But I will thank George Lucas for the prequel movies. I will thank George Lucas for the prequel universe that he gave us. Because again, I think The Force Awakens would not have given me the same experience I did without that. And I think my entire love of Star Wars would have honestly kind of potentially deteriorated more over these years. Ugh, who am I kidding? That's not true. But, you know, we'll leave it at that. He gave me something that allowed me to perpetuate my love of Star Wars, and through that, and through those movies, gave me a ton more merchandise and material to absorb. And thank you for that, George Lucas. I really do, even though you're kind of a weirdo. The question is, should we keep talking about Star Wars? So I could literally fill another 40 minutes about Star Wars. But since there was some points of confusion about this when I was talking about it with friends at home, I will give this little explanation right now. So George Lucas, in all his wisdom, believe it or not, had been protecting Star Wars chronology since the original movies and through the prequel movies up until his sale of the franchise to Disney, and what was that, 2012 maybe? 2011 or 2012. And what I mean by that is, you know, obviously since the original movies have come out, there are tons of books, video games, you know, even TV adaptations and shows about Star Wars. And believe it or not, and of course all of the like visual dictionaries and like, oh, know every alien species in Star Wars, which if you want to, I could go over those as well, but I don't think you do. That all masterfully fit into this chronology. I mean, you don't think about it, you know, as much from the side, but if you really like Star Wars, like, that's pretty nuts. That means the hundreds, maybe not hundreds, the dozens upon dozens of books that have been written since the original movie, along with those video games, literally all fit into some master timeline. And I actually have read the entire chronology of Star Wars, and it is long as like, it starts where lightsabers were this imaginary concept and you needed a giant backpack to power it was power source because the crystals were unstable. You know, it talks about the old Hutt Empire is still the longest free-forming entity outside, you know, in the Outer Rim. It throws in when, you know, Darth Revan and Darth Malak from the KOTOR games existed and what kind of technology you had at that time. And it even goes farther to include the timelines after the original trilogy of when, like, you know, Han and Leia get married finally and they have their twins, Jaina and Jason, hence, you know, like, everyone's like, oh, Kylo Ren and Rey, are they related or something? I don't know. Like, it's very clear to me that J.J. Abrams took ideas, potentially, or the writer took ideas from this expanded universe beyond the original movies. But, you know, and all of it is in order. Like, it was even to the point where I believe, this probably was the 90s or the 80s, a book came out about Lobaka, Chewbacca's nephew, who was the first Jedi, the Wookiee Jedi. And at that point, Lucas, for some reason, said, okay, well, now that Lobaka is a Jedi, there won't be no more Wookiee Jedis. And literally, after he made that decree, because you do need to go to Lucas, at the time, you did need to go to LucasArts to get permission to make stuff, there haven't been any Wookiee Jedis. After, I think, Clone Wars came out, and they were dealing with this Republic conflict, someone approached him and they wanted to make a game with a Wookiee protagonist. And he said, no, you can't do that because I will not support a game where your protagonist can't even speak Galactic Basic. And they're like, well, what if we just have him speak in English? And he says, no, because chronology has established that Wookiees lack the vocal cords to produce the sounds of Galactic Basic in the same way we lack the vocal cords to imitate the Wookiee sounds of Shriwook. Yes, Shriwook is the name of the language of the Wookiees, home planet Kashyyyk. Anyway, the point is, Lucas, to me, very much cared about this. And I think it's because he understands this need of fans and this need of world builders to keep everything believably in the sphere of the medium they've created. Hence, like, I don't think you see a lot of, like, Lord of the Rings expanded universe, because J.R.R. Tolkien was so specific in what he created. It's like, no, I created this one thing, this is it, you can only experience it this way. Blah, blah, blah. Now, I love George for that, but I also respect his decision to sell the franchise, because by doing that, he blew up chronology. He blew up what we as fans would originally consider as Star Wars canon. And that means, you know, part of the actual story. Now, what Disney has done is they said, hey guys, we're really sorry, but we can't adhere to this. We need to make a movie about what's happening after the original trilogy, and we're not going to use the tidbits, like, we're not going to use the exact stories from these books, because some of them are really terrible, and I've read them. They're really bad. But, and then that gave them, Disney and the writers, the freedom to pull what they wanted from those books, which is really nice. But, so I can sum it up now. Every single book written, a comic book, video game, written about Star Wars, other than the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and now this new trilogy, is no longer canon. It is, quote, considered Star Wars legend, which I suppose is a really nice compromise. I mean, these things could have happened, but we don't know. Kind of in the way it's like, where the fuck is Atlantis? Well, it could have been there, but we don't know. Again, smart decision. If you go to Wikipedia, your source for all things Star Wars, it'll categorize everything via canon or legend now, instead of just all canon. Now, what is still canon, other than the original trilogy, the prequel movies, and the new trilogy, believe it or not, are the two, of course, Disney-produced series, Star Wars The Clone Wars, which also was under the guide of Lucas Entertainment for a while, and the series they produced after the purchase of Star Wars and after the announce of the new movie called Star Wars Rebels, which I highly, highly suggest you watch. It's awesome. It kind of feels like watching Firefly. If you're an original fan of the Clone Wars series by Disney, there are a lot of crossover characters, which are really fun. And you know what? Good job, Disney, because the more kids you can get on board with Star Wars, the happier I will be. But moving on. The other things that are still canon are, believe it or not, book and comic book series released by Disney. So Disney, again, is basically taking over the brand, but for better or for worse. So if anyone has questions about Star Wars canon, chronology, anything like that, it's gone. All that exists now are prequel movies, Clone Wars, and this is in order of, like, chronological order of Star Wars, not when the movies came out, et cetera, et cetera. It goes A Phantom Menace, the Clone Wars, and then in between that and Revenge of the Sith is Star Wars, The Clone Wars, the animated series by Disney, which I think is about 4 or 5 seasons, available on Netflix. Then Star Wars Revenge of the Sith. Then Star Wars Rebels, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, followed by The Force Awakens and the untitled Star Wars Episode 8 and Episode 9 films. Now, there is a master list of where the other non-main story Disney-produced Star Wars movies are, and that includes Rogue Squadron, the untitled Boba Fett and Han Solo films, etc., etc. Those also will be considered canon, and I do believe the events of Rogue Squadron take place before or during A New Hope, but I'll have to check. So there is this idea of preserving the universe to a degree, but it did kind of receive a nice reset button here. So anyway, talked way too much about Star Wars. That's the 30-minute mark here. So we'll move on to our other subjects. But you can hate the prequel movies as much as you want, seriously. But if you're a true Star Wars fan, in the greater sense of the universe and the lore, and not just the original films, you can't deny what they did for us. So we'll leave it there. Moving on. The Shannara Chronicles. Okay. I know. You're also like, wait, this show on MTV? Isn't that the network that does, like, Teen Wolf? And like there's a lot of stuff on MTV I don't like. It's like, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think I've seen the first, like, 5 episodes of Teen Wolf, and I don't hate it. I probably should watch it again, because it's probably something I'll, you know, I'm a former Charmed fan here. I probably can't hate it that much. But it's very clear to me that after watching the Shannara Chronicles, based on a book series, I think, called the Shannara Chronicles, you know, MTV has very much tried to rebrand themselves in the same way ABC Family, aka Freeform, is doing, and that is literally trying to copy the CW model and just produce enough more content so they can feed more shit to, you know, Netflix and Hulu, those streaming sites, because that seems to be, you know, how people are watching these days. Now, I'm going to throw this out there. The 100 on the CW returns next week. And, you know, seasons 1 and 2 are on Netflix. And so that gives you a full week to catch up and experience the fucking joy that is CW's The 100. The battle for the ground isn't over. But anyway, there's... And it's funny I mentioned shonen anime earlier, too, because that's basically what the Shannara Chronicles is. You know, it features a male protagonist and 2 female protagonists as well that are all, you know, on this quest to save the mythical world they're in. Now, unlike a lot of these shows, the history and the lore is kind of a bit breezed over. It kind of like, believe it or not, it is important to the series, but they're not twisting it in mysticism or like it, with multiple perspectives like the way Game of Thrones does in the lore of that universe. It's very much a mystery to us as it is the same people there. Well, I mean, this is a show, you know, for teens, and, you know, you're supposed to watch it with less time and involvement in it. So, you know, I mean, they do a lot of exposition of like, oh, long ago, the Elkree protected the world before when it was young from the thousands of demons. And of course, you know, the druids, the magic practitioners and guardians of this world are long gone, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's all fun and good, but, you know, that is a specific choice in terms of storytelling to have that much exposition on a show. But, you know, I'm not watching this for the same reason I watch Game of Thrones. I'm watching it for the same reason I arguably watch, like, Rain or The 100 or Arrow on the CW. It's straightforward. I don't want to say predictable in a detrimental sense, but predictable in the sense that, hey, when we sit down and watch TV, you know, you have an idea of what you're going to get for the most part. And that's why, you know, the show, we talk about a lot of series where we deal with shows that don't do that. But in general, network television understands the medium fairly well and understands what the average viewer wants to see at the end of their long day or when they're trying to unwind. And it isn't necessarily something really dense and moving and forward. It's kind of something that hits all of the same beats, you know, over and over again that, you know, resonate and make you feel happy. And by that sense, I mean, like, it's nice when, you know, friendship prevails over all. It's nice when a character makes a mistake and has to deal with the consequences after, but there's a happy resolution. You know, it's nice when someone who, for all odds, probably wouldn't have been chosen, but is because of, quote, destiny and choices. It's fun to hear, like, oh, you've doubted yourself your whole life, but did you know you're the last Shannara, Will? You're the last bloodline of a long line of elven kings who protected this world from the darkness for years. You know, it's cheesy. It's campy. There's no way to avoid that. But there's kind of something wonderful about it when it's, you know, well, yeah, when it's done well. When it's done to a point where it's not, you know, shoving its foot in its own mouth, which happens in, for example, in Marco Polo sometimes, which happens, for example, in Spartacus, although Spartacus is a whole other entity. But there, you know, it's funny, I came home and my roommates were, we were rewatching the OC the other day, but it's kind of if we watched the OC and Ryan had somewhat of a greater destiny ahead of him, and everyone was telling him that, oh, you have a greater destiny ahead of you, but you still are watching the fumblings of everyday life with this greater idea in the background. Okay, now, obviously, the Shannara Chronicles is a lot more pointed in the direction of where the story is going than the OC, but it is a lot of those, you know, kind of silly tropes where we see two people together And it's like, why aren't you just being honest with each other? It's like, well, because if they were honest with each other, then we wouldn't have the next 20 minutes of conflict, which is pretty entertaining. So I hope you get an idea of what kind of show I'm describing right now. But the one thing I would want to point out, if you need another fantasy series to fill the void of, like, I don't know, True Blood, or I don't know, if you gave up on a lot of CW shows because they're on their fifth season now, check it out. You might not love it, but I mean, screw it. If you'll know if you want to keep watching this 20 minutes after you know you're into the show. So again, the Shannara Chronicles on MTV, three chosen to save the world from darkness. And yes, two of those children chosen are women, and thank God, because if this was another shitty show with like three bro protagonists, I'm gonna like kill MTV. Swear to God. And I mean, That seems to be a trend, and I'd like to thank the 100 for this, because my favorite characters on that show are all strong women who are all at the forefront of every scene, etc., etc. And we're proving that it's not that hard to give women and write women in these roles, because they're completely believable and really entertaining. Sorry, getting really heated about that. Guys, stop bullshitting yourselves. Women can do everything, and it's pretty fucking awesome to see them do that. So, there we go. Freeform Shadowhunters, I think that's also based on a book series, another show with female protagonists. Like, we've seen a good trend here, and I hope that keeps up, and I hope it doesn't kind of twist itself in a way where we're doing that and talking about it, but the stories we're telling aren't any more progressive than, and it's just like a woman and like four dudes, like kind of like The Blind Spot, but I don't hate that show either, so perhaps unwarranted commentary. But again, The Shannara Chronicles on MTV. And more importantly, if you haven't or are, please watch The 100 on the CW, because it is better than The Shannara Chronicles, and hashtag Team Bellamy. Moving on, so I let you go hopefully in the next 10 minutes, or, you know, you could just shut this podcast off right now. We're going to talk about comedy / dramedy / perhaps I don't even really know what this medium is. Well, I mean, it's how to categorize these types of series, but we're basically going to focus on You're the Worst on FXX, Casual, which was a Golden Globe nominee on Hulu, Master of None from Netflix, and I suppose I really would like to talk about Togetherness on HBO, but yeah, you know what? We'll throw that in there too. We'll talk a little Togetherness, even though I haven't seen that, and like, you know, it came out, I think, Spring 2015, so hopefully the new season will be out. It's the Mark Duplass show. But what's interesting about these is they've moved very, very heavily away from a sitcom type of medium. You know, from the pacing to the cinematography to the subject matter to the way, honestly, the most big one is the way resolution happens, or resolution is received. And what's nice, and not to say that sitcoms are bad, I still enjoy Modern Family. I love Fresh Off the Boat. Blackish, those are all shows that came out. Well, okay, not Modern. Blackish and Fresh Off the Boat are two shows that came out in the past 2 years that are sitcom formulas that are really, really good. The sitcom is not dead, nor should it be dead. However, it is nice to experience kind of a new change and see brilliance in something that maybe hasn't been done before. And I do want to have another discussion about this with someone fairly regarded in TV, because I wasn't that up on TV, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s. So perhaps I could be wrong. Maybe we just haven't seen something like this for the past, you know, 10 years, and it existed before. But with a series like Master of None, Casual, and You're the Worst, you are going to hardcore laugh out loud, but you are also hardcore going to feel a strong wave of emotions, not necessarily just about like your life, but in your friends' lives, the greater world in general. It feels so honest to you that you do care about all of these characters, so much so that it's easy to put yourself in their shoes. It's easy, or maybe not put yourself in their exact shoes, but to put a warped version of their scenario to your life. It'll feel there. And again, maybe this is because I'm 25 and, you know, I'm podcasting to a group of 30 people and don't exactly know what I want to do with my life. But all of these shows deal with that magnificently. I think they give a focal point and a voice to types of characters like, you know, Gretchen on You're the Worst Who's Dealing with Depression, a new outlet, a new form of expression. You know, everyone says, well, how many shows, for Casual, how many shows do we have about teenage girls and their mothers? Well, it turns out a lot. What's awesome about Casual is it kind of takes that dynamic and makes it really interesting, makes it really honest, and makes it incredibly human. I was kind of blown back by how honest that show felt, from, the mother dealing with her divorce and her terrible relationship with her parents, and the simple raw emotions of just wanting to feel wanted, wanting to feel happy, but wanting everything in everyone else's life to be perfect and under your control. And it's not an irrational feeling, and it's not that sitcoms or other shows don't deal with that, but it deals with it in such a raw, almost unresolved kind of way that it makes it feel incredibly more human, in the sense that, you know, at times I think, oh shit, what do I want to do? Or like, oh, so-and-so's at this age now. Or like, and you come up with answers and you might be able to talk it through. At the end of the day, do you get complete resolution from it? Do you get the exact answer you want? Are you 100% happy because of that thought process? And the answer is no. You could be 75% happy. You could be 85. You could be 3% because it did nothing for you that day. You know, it shows this pacing and change in life that doesn't feel regimented, that doesn't feel, quote, same old, same old, and it doesn't play with, as you know, I mentioned in Star Wars discussion, or the Shannara Chronicles discussion, it doesn't play with concepts that beats that you expect something to happen with, or you have anticipation for. You know, you see a conflict happen, you're like, oh, okay, we'll see what interesting might happen, but down the line, you know, in an episode, they're going to resolve this and we're going to get something else. You know, you see that happen in Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder all the time, and, you know, different shows, but and I guess the thing about that I enjoy is it makes you think about 1,000 times more. And not to say if you don't want to think about it, not to say these shows aren't still hilarious and funny, but there's an added richness to them, which I really, really enjoy. Again, from down to trying to get in the head of a 16-year-old girl, you know, in these types of circumstances, you can tell a billion different stories. And, you know, probably one of the criticisms the show received when it came out is like, cool, another story about white people and their problems. Well, yeah, well, I am not white, so I'm kind of fine with that. But B, it's more like, we hear a lot of stories like that. But if you can tell it in a way that just feels so human, like Laura's story, like the daughter's story about, you know, feeling all that weird angst at school, stop trying to create, you know, kind of see the world through her eyes, if you see a world with her in it, which is arguably what a lot of other shows do, it's great storytelling. And again, I focused on Casual there too, but I mean, Master of None does the same thing. There are so many lines from that series, from things that Aziz says, to, you know, his father talking about Sylvia Plath's fig trees, to even John Benjamin talking about, like, the percentage of how you feel you should be together with your wife. And he's like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, I mean, yeah, of course some days it's going to be 100%, we belong together and I love each other, but, I mean, that's not realistic. I mean, some days it's 100, some days it's 75, some days it's 12%. I mean, and then Aziz, well, how do you deal with that? John Benjamin doesn't really I'm sorry, I don't know the character's name. Dev asks him that, and then John Benjamin, you just learn how. It's part of life. And that isn't necessarily a resolution. It's just a reality. And you can take it as you will. And, you know, and it's funny, I'm talking about all this serious, serious subject matter when we're discussing shows that are labeled as comedies, which they are. But there's something to be appreciated about that. You know, I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I love The League. I love shows like South Park too. And those, you know, The League and It's Always Sunny to me are this brand of, quote, terrible people comedy. Terrible people doing hilarious things that you're gonna laugh at. But at the end of the day, do you really care that much about these people? Do their actions really cause you to think about how you live your life in a, not necessarily a profound, but in a deeper way? And the answer is kind of no. And not saying that they have to, but when you're presented with a wonderful show like You're the Worst, where you see those exact same things, you see a character pissed off at his ex, and for some reason he's at that wedding, and he's using all of his disposable cameras there to take shots of his dick, slash, you know, the other character shaking the wedding boxes to see which is going to be really good to steal. Like, yes, that does fall under the people, category of terrible people comedy, which is used often. But we're also given this incredibly human side to them, to the point where, holy shit, you are really, really toxic people. But I kind of want you to be really happy together. I kind of want everyone in your life to be happy. I mean, I want to see, you know, if I were to do this, how would I handle this situation? How would, you know, and you're just, I think what it comes down to is we're just given such a fresh, maybe not fresh, but just a different perspective. And, you know, constantly when, I hate using the word art because I don't think I deserve to talk about things at a level, you know, that art should, because I'm not smart enough. But when you're talking about art, you're talking about a creative process. You do look for things that catch your eye that are new. Like, and you know, it's not always met with great, you know, great acceptance, but it's still talked about. And I know a lot of people in general haven't watched these shows yet. For whatever reason, it doesn't fit their network routine. You know, you're busy. I get it. You're really busy. And, or, you know, you have other shit to do. I get it. But I highly, highly recommend, if you listen to this podcast, that you watch one of those three shows. And listen, I guess, four if you're including Togetherness. But you watch You're the Worst on FXX, which just finished its second season. You watch Casual on Hulu, which has just one season. Or you watch Master of None on Netflix, which also has one season. Mostly because I don't necessarily know if you're going to 100% love it, because TV, everyone experiences different. Everyone feels different things. You might, you know, my friend said, I couldn't get into Master of One because I really hated Aziz's acting. And I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't even think about that, because I was just feeling pure nostalgia for New York and then feeling all these raw human emotions and thinking about my parents and thinking about my future, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, oh, well, I'll check it out again. But, you know, won't necessarily give you, you know, a profound new appreciation for television or a profound new way to look at your life or anything like that. But I think it will give you a different perspective of how a show can run, a show can be made. And for all you know, it might make you interested in something else on TV, or it might make you interested in something else in your life. So, a little heavy in a weird way. I mean, this is heavy in the sense that, like, we're you know, it's like a dumbbell, not like a real weight or anything like that. But there's something magical about a show that can be so all-encompassing. And, you know, just thank you to the writers and the showrunners of all three of these. I know Aziz, sorry, is involved with the Netflix production of Master of None. I know Stephen Falk is the showrunner of FFX's You're the Worst, and he's a badass. And I believe she's a former SNL individual. Let's see. Maybe not. Michaela Watkins, I know, is a pretty huge, huge force behind Casual. I know she's a producer as well as an actor in the series. But anyway, rambling on too much near the end here, getting too caught up in thoughts. Thank you guys for listening so much. Again, stay tuned for information on changes to the podcast in terms of naming or what you need to subscribe to. But again, thank you for listening. I don't even know if you guys love TV as much as I do. Perhaps if you did, you'd probably join me on this podcast. But go watch some great comedy. Go have great days. And everyone, just really, really enjoy your weekend. And Happy New Year from Steven over at Storytime with Tofu. Thanks, guys.